Blog Talk Radio.
This is Leonard Johnson from Marion, South Carolina, with the Triple Wing Hammer Report. I want to, first of all, that song was dedicated to all of you. I wanted to give you a standing ovation because last week we had over 175 downloads of last week's interview with Harold. And God, I really appreciate that you take the time out and listen. You know, whether it's live or whether it's download, whatever, you know, you, I'm happy for your support. So it's a standing ovation from me to you. And, well, I just want to thank you for it. A couple of announcements, again, the same announcements that we have every week. We just want to, again, get these out in the front so we won't have to come back to it later. But again, got our National Single Wing Symposium this summer coming up in Virginia. And I told you some of the names that was going to be there. That's going to be June 26th through 28th. And sometime in the near future, we're going to get Jerry Sargent, who is hosting this year, get him on to talk about that symposium so we can get you out there, because I think it's a, you know, like we talked about last year, the more events you invest in, the better your kids will be. And I hate to, you know, I don't like to call it a cost, but it's more of an investment than anything else. We got the greats like Travis Connors, Derek Minor, Mickey Thompson, Sean Orr. And my goodness, I didn't realize this. Again, our speaker tonight, Corey Parker, is also going to be speaking. So, and you got the legends, Ed Raisley and George Rykovic, guys who've been around for a while. And it only costs $25 for a coach. And if you bring your entire staff, whether that staff is one or 50, it's only going to cost you $50 for your entire staff. So, again, those dates are June 26th through 28th in the great city of Dumfries, Virginia. And stepping forward, almost a year away from now, we got the conclave in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. That's going to be March 6th through the 7th. And I'm sure Todd Bross is working on that. Meeting again. He does such a super job in getting that thing organized and getting great speakers and everything out there. So those days are going to be March 6th and 7th of next year. And let me tell you guys, that's a great event to go to. You learn more, you bond more with people. It's such a great thing. And it's like this with all these events I'm talking about, because it's not so much the information, but the bonding and the relationship you build with people. And it's unreal. I'm still waiting word from J.J. Lawson about the Double Wing Symposium that is held in New Orleans. And as soon as we get that date together, we will pass it on to you. Our guest last week, Harold Strauss, he mentioned some books. And as soon as I got off the off air yesterday, I went and got those books. Let me tell you, and let me tell you again, guys, you need to invest in these books. This will help you out so much as far as dealing with your kids and everything. One of the books I already had, but I will give them out to you again. And I strongly suggest that you go get these books. The first one, Season of Life by Jeffrey Marks. Great book. I finished reading it this morning, and I just wanted to finish the book before I got on air, because I know I don't like to tell you something that I haven't done, and that's a great book. The next book is The Butterfly Effect by Andy Andrews. A simple 20-minute read, but so powerful. I won't steal it, but I won't steal the theme in the book for you, but you need to get that book. The other book is Inside Out Coaching by Joe Ehrman. I finished this book maybe some time ago, but I'm going back to read it again, because a lot of this fits into what we're talking about. And guys, if you read these three books right here, talk so much about relationships with your kids and looking at things from a different perspective. It is going to help me a lot in dealing with the kids I'm dealing with right now. But I urge you to get this. And a fourth book I want to put it through in there is Good to Great by Jim Collins. That's one of the best books I've ever read before. And, all these books, again, none of these books are X's and O's book. The X's and O's we know about. The X's and O's is easy. But dealing with your kids, I think, is one of the things that we struggle with. And dealing with your staff and trying to get your staff on motivated to do things. And I think if we take another look at this, we can get better mileage of what we are doing. Again, let me say, any suggestions that you would like for people to come on the show, let me know. We'll do the homework and we'll talk and we'll get them on. And just let me know. Any of your kids who get scholarships or special awards or anything that's dealing with the wing, and because we got this misnomer out there. Our kids, we don't prepare our kids for anybody's school. And we just need to put that word out, because we in the wing business know that's not true. I could just go down the list of people who come out of programs who run wings, any type of wing, and who are doing great things. And not only in their college, but some of them even have even gone to the top level in the NFL. So let me know, and I'll get those names out there for you. And if you get a promotion or you do some special thing as coaches, let me know so I can let the other wingers know what's going on out there. Because we like to beat our own chest. We no longer want to sit back and allow people to beat us down, but we want to beat our own chest and be proud of what we do, because we do a great thing for these kids. Last week we got name from a coach. Coach Bear from Connecticut sent in a player whose name is Mark Wildman. Mark is at Western Connecticut State University and just completed his first year there. And if you know anything about Darren runs the old single wing on there, and his kid, now he's been there for a year, but Mark started all games as a as an offensive guard on that team that went 8-2 and won the ECAC bowl game. Not only has Darren put him in school, I've been responsible for placing him in school, but he's also placed players at Plymouth State, Westfield State, and Nicholls State. I mean, guys, we need to put the word out there, because people actually don't think we help these guys, and we really do help these guys get place. And it's not about wings. It's, you know, if they can play, the coaches will recognize that they can play. So let's toot our own horn and let people know what's going on out there. I think that's all the announcements I have tonight. I'm going to look into my notes real quick. Now let's get on with the business here. Our guest tonight, Corey Parker. I met Corey in Lansing, Michigan about 4 or 5 years ago. And here's the young guy running around with a notepad in his hand and just taking notes and, you know, asking questions. He kind of reminds me of David. He would find, you know, covering the campus, you know, what's the reward? And his young boy he just wanted to know what he got if he went up against the Giant. Well, Corey was running around at this thing just asking questions and taking notes. And right then I saw this kid was going to be special, because he was hungry. He was looking for answers, and he was so humble when he was doing it. And I remember those couple of days well. And if you heard him speak, you know, you can feel the passion and the fire he has about not only the game of football, but how he loved those kids that he deals with. He's married, and again, like last week, Harold married up. Well, Corey definitely married up. And it's just amazing how we find these ladies who are able to kick it in with us and support us, and my hat goes off to him. And he just recently had a son who was born, and I talked to him earlier today, and he was playing with his baby, and that's a good thing. I know he's a proud papa. So let me see if I can get Corey online so we can get going here. And let me see here if I hit the right thing. Corey, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me, Coach?
Yeah, I got you fine, man. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good this evening, Coach. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes. That's good, man. Well, you know, you make my day. You know, you're one of my young heroes. I got an echo on this thing. I don't know where it's coming from. Hold on for a minute, okay? Let me see if I can make some adjustments here. All right, now how's that? Okay, good. I don't hear that.
That's good.
Okay. Now, Corey, before we get started right here, I want you to tell everybody a little bit about yourself, man. Who you are? Who's this bright star?
I don't know if I'm too bright of a star. I just think I'm willing to work harder than some other guys are, but. I pride myself in just being an everyday guy. I grew up on the east side of Detroit, not a good neighborhood at all, but I grew up in a two-family household. I had two parents there, which was awesome, and growing up in our society, we all know that there are some strong points with that. The negative portion of that, though, was the fact that my parents were both just 18 years old when they brought me into this world. So some people may take that negative connotation. I take it in all positive, because I think they did a great job with me, in addition to getting me out to play sports and keeping me out of the streets and things like that. Mom and Dad did such a great job with that. So that's who I am ultimately. I'm just a kid that grew up on the east side of Detroit that could tackle people pretty good. And I got a good education paid for in a Catholic school on the west side of Detroit. So I had to travel on a bus every morning to the west side of Detroit to get to the high school that I went to, and it was a very, very established football program and a very, very established high school where we were taught by nuns and sisters. So ultimately, that's who I am, just a everyday kid. And from there, I really had the opportunity to continue to tackle people, and that gave me a chance to show off my skills to Division I schools. And I was awarded a scholarship to Eastern Michigan, and I played there for 5 years. And there was no NFL draft for me because I said I could tackle. I never said I could run. I wasn't the fastest cat in the world. So I was able to use my talents and what I learned as a coach, as a player, and turn into a coach in 2006. I started coaching, and I love it. I mean, it's the best thing that could have ever happened to me. So now I'm able to use all the information that was given to me from the time I was young to the time now that I'm a little bit older. I can pass it on to my kids. That's who I am, Coach. I'm just a hardworking guy that tries to make everybody else's life a little bit easier through my hard work.
About 2 years ago, I was sitting at the Single Wing Conclave, and you were speaking then, and they put up this video of you. And that video, at that time, you know, I'm a little sentimental old fox sometimes. And that video brought tears to my eyes. And it was about this kid that you took in. I think his name is Angelo Whittles. Is that correct?
Angelo Whittles, yes, sir.
Could you tell us a story about that? Tell us what happened there.
Yeah.
What is he doing? You know, tell us the story.
I sure can. Angelo was a kid that grew up in the Southwest Detroit area where I coach at now, and he was a kid that wasn't as fortunate as others. So he was bouncing around from house to house, living with different people and trying to find make a way for himself. And he was you know, attending a neighboring high school. He wasn't attending my high school. So just by way of recognition. In the football world, he would see me, I would see him at 7-on-7s and things of that nature. We would speak, we would say hello. It's pretty much the end of it. Well, his sophomore year came up, and he was pretty much involved with cliques and gangs over in the area that he was playing ball in, and he made a decision that winter that he needed a change of scenery. Per se. So he came over to my high school without me knowing. So when I saw the kid, I said, wow, you know, this kid is here in my building. Maybe I can help him out. So I started showing him some little stuff in the weight room that he could do to better himself and some things he could do academically to better himself. And eventually it turned into me dropping him off at home, per se, quote-unquote at home. And we ended up finding out that the home that I was dropping him off at was just a different place every single time. So at that point, I got a little concerned. And that's when I asked him, is there anything that I need to know? And from there, he didn't really want to talk to me too much about it. He just said, Coach, you know, if you can drop me off every day, it would help me out instead of him walking or catching the bus. Basically, long story short, Coach, come to find out, Angelo was homeless. He was living with some people and some things didn't work out. So he was, like I said, he was bouncing from house to house. And inside of my program, I couldn't just allow that to happen. I had to get involved somehow. So he was living with his guardian at the time. And we got him a stable situation with her. But what turned out was Angelo then attempted to commit suicide after some depression. And I was called, of course. I met him down at Children's Hospital. I called my beautiful wife, and she was actually in her fourth-year medical school at the time. So she met me at the – she was already working at the same hospital. And so she met me in the children's department, and she came down and she told me this was going to happen to him. We're going to, you know, do some things. And from there, Coach, we basically made some decisions, her and I. You know, we may need to get involved. At that point, we just started, you know, keeping him with us every once in a while. We would go pick him up, take him to eat, some things like that. And from there, we went to football camp. Things seemed normal. And we came back from football camp. That weekend, after we got back from football camp, Angelo was picked up by the police. The police gave me a call, let me know they have one of my boys, found out it was Angelo. He had got himself involved where he stole a bike because he was trying to ride his bike to go and get food. He hadn't ate since we were at football camp. At that point, when we went to court, when we went to court for this case, that's when we knew, my wife and I, we had to get involved. Once she gave me the go-ahead, I asked him, hey, do you want to move in with us? You know, things are going to be tight. We don't got the most money in the world, but we can help you make yourself better. And Angelo made the decision to move in with us, and he's been with us now for the past 3 years. Well, he's off in college now. He played linebacker at Fair State University, a Division II school out here in Michigan. He was given a scholarship to play football there. He has a 3.5 GPA right now. We're very, very proud of that. But we really have some work to do to get him out of the situation he was in when he came to our high school. He had a 1.2 GPA. When he graduated from our high school, he was graduating with honors. So we really worked academically with him, and he wasn't too great of a football player either, so we really had to do some untraditional things. Weight room-wise, we took him from being 208 and flabby to 238 and strong with muscles. So we was able to do some great things with him to help him better himself. But ultimately, it was what we wanted to help him better himself with socially, and just creating a sense of family for him. And that's ultimately what I think, other than the decisions that he made himself, has helped him propel himself into an everyday young man. Whereas he applied for a job at Lowe's the other day, and he texted me, "Pops, I got the job." And so he's happy to have a $9 in the office. I mean, just little things like that, that we go from a kid attempting to commit suicide, a kid stealing a bike, to now he's an everyday college student with a great GPA and has dreams to go into law enforcement. So, I mean, ultimately we try and do something of this nature for all of the kids that play for me at River Rouge, but of course we don't have the finances to do so. So we just try and make a way for everybody's life to be a little bit easier. I know it's put some stress on my wife sometimes, and I'm always trying to give myself, but ultimately she knows that my heart is in the right place, and I love her a lot for it. So that's Angelo's whole story, and anybody can check out the story. I think they have it still on Fox Sports Net. Coach gives a player a home and gets a star QB. I think that's the title of it. So if anybody wants to check that out, that's what I think is located under.
Well, that was a great story. You know, again, it brought tears to my eyes when I saw it, and it made me proud of you, because you not only talk the talk, but you walk the walk also. And that's very important in our business and everything, because you know, you need to have many pants on your back for that one. What, you know, I was going through your resume.
Yes, sir.
And what made you go to River Rouge? I mean, you just come off a championship year with the other school. You were riding good and everything. What made you want to go to River Rouge?
Well, I was just a defensive coordinator with my high school head coach, and being a defensive coordinator for him is basically being a position coach, because he pretty much has his hands involved in everything. But it was an opportunity that he saw in me, and he said, "Corey, get out." I'm like, "Coach, what do you mean? Get out. This school is calling me for you. Leave. Go. I know you're going to do great." And so he was pushing me out. In addition, the funniest thing about River Rouge, Coach, was my wife was the valedictorian of River Rouge in 2001, and they were calling me, and they didn't even know that I had married this young lady. So I was at work. I was a personal trainer at Valley Total Fitness, and I was at work, and they called the business phone. And so I picked up my business phone. "Hello, how you doing?" And it's the athletic director. He says, "Hey, do you want to come down to River Rouge?" I said, "River Rouge, are you serious?" So I get off the phone with him immediately. I say, "Sir, I'll come in on an interview whenever you want." Get off the phone with him. I call my wife. I say, "You would never guess who just called me." And at that time, I was, you know, talking to other schools and things of that nature. "You never guess who called me." I said, "River Rouge." She said, "What?" After that, we went home. We had a conversation about it. And, you know, the story is basically all set. I mean, my high school coach, he's pretty much a legend out here. And he's, anything that comes from him is good as gold. But perspective, not a lot of guys have seen coaches leave from under his wing and come and have some quote-unquote success that I still think I haven't even scratched the surface of. But ultimately, that's why I left, Coach. My coach pushed me out the door. It was you know, my wife's school, and my high school is now closed, so I couldn't go back there and call that home. That was always a dream of mine. So ultimately, the reason it was simple. My coach pushed me out. It was an opportunity to become a head coach at a school that, you know, they hadn't did anything successful. So I thought, why not go help kids in this community rather than think about it in a win and loss portion? It was just more of a, let me go get my hands involved with the kids out here, because most importantly, the kids from this area were kids that grew up just like me in a very socioeconomic failure of an area per se.
How many kids do you have in your program right now?
Inside of my program, Coach, I got 25 on my middle school team. I have 25 on my junior varsity team. And then I have 40 on my varsity team.
And what are the demographics of that?
My team is, I would say, 96% African-American. We may have a couple of Caucasian young men or Latino young men, but it may be one or two per year at the maximum out of all three teams.
And you mentioned that you got a feeder program, which ninth grade, middle school and JV, or just
Yep. So my middle school team is the middle school itself. That's a 6th through 8th grade team, and we coach them as well. My assistant coaches, we all have one practice. And my junior varsity team, that's usually 9th and 10th graders that didn't do what they were supposed to do in the classroom. So JV is some level punishment, or it's 9th graders that still need some development, or guys that did not commit to doing what they needed to do in the weight room to show their team guys. So ultimately, it's three teams practicing all at once, and it's pretty funky. I mean, it's very, very aggressive. The middle schoolers love trying to get after those 9th and 10th graders because they're not afraid of them. Inside run drill and tackling drills, I usually have those guys go up against each other. It gives those groups good chances to scrimmage a full group against one another. And it's great to have those varsity guys working with those 9th and 10th grade guys and 6th through 8th grade guys, because they create a mentoring program with them. So every senior is responsible to mentor one of those 9th or 10th graders. And then every junior is responsible to mentor one of those 6th through 8th graders. So it just creates a brotherhood, and ultimately it keeps other coaches out of my backyard, per se. Nobody should take players. Now nobody can get the Rouge kids because they're all a brotherhood. They all love each other. So they're not willing to go to the school that's bigger in size and, let's say, have more finances than what we're able to provide.
Okay. Now, I know you've got a staff of about 15 coaches, and they paid well, and you got an offensive and a defensive coordinator, and you got all that good stuff going on, right?
No, sir. No, sir. Not at all. Not at all, Coach. So basically, what we do is we have offensive staff and a defensive staff, and I just basically built this up. It wasn't me and my three technique from college that was doing this. It was me and him, and he was responsible for all of the linemen, offensive and defensive. I was responsible for all of the backs, offensive and defensive. But we've grown this thing to find, and I was listening to Coach Harrell, and basically what he said about finding guys and what he really looks for. And I do agree on a couple of things. I don't look for guys that know the most X and O's per se. I look for loyal guys. Loyalty is number one for me. And so what I do with all of my coaches, since it's all about loyalty and since it's not about finances, I put everyone's check in one big pool and everybody gets the same amount, you know, and everybody is satisfied with it because I let them know, hey, as the defensive coordinator at a high school that went to the state championship, coaching with my high school coach, I got $300. So whatever it is, and we had major Division I guys, And so when it really boils down to it, I'll tell my guys and say, hey, listen, I'm not trying to shortchange anybody, but I can tell you, high school athletics is not about the finances. It's about what are we giving to them? What are we giving to these kids? And so my coaches are all buying guys. They've all bought into that particular philosophy. So in the past, I have coached my offense, and it's now to a point where I can quote unquote manage the process with the offense and be, I think, the best spotter in the country. I can let our offensive coaching staff know, hey, this is what they're in. This is what they're trying to do. Run power again. Don't start running it until they make this adjustment. It was just me and my eyeballs. Well, now I got three gentlemen, an offensive line coach, a running backs coach, and the quarterbacks coach. That all of these guys, they work together, and they get their eyes on everything, and they're making play calls off of what I tell them what's available. And so defensively, I'm able to spend more time with my defensive backs. And this has just happened over the past year. My two starting safeties have just graduated and went off to college. And so now I'm in a situation where I got younger 9th grade, 10th grade freaks at safety that I got to make sure these guys are good, because at the end of the day, I'm a defensive guy, coach. That's where I hang my hat. If we can't tackle people, no matter how many points we can score, we're not going to be a good football team. So at the end of the day, we want to be able to hit people in the mouth and cover some ground in the safety position. So I'm now able to actually coach up that group as my full position group. So no, we don't have 15 coaches. We got about 3 on each side, and all 8 of us are responsible for coaching up 3 football teams, a middle school team, a JV team, and a varsity team. And we split up the responsibilities pretty good, but it's never a situation where I'm training anybody and taking anybody away from their family, because our values within our program is, you know, stay family football. Football is last. So if any of my coaches are ever stretched out and they got some family things they need to handle, another coach is prepared to step in, because ultimately on the middle school level, X and O-wise, all we're doing is running power and 46 bear all night long. We ain't changing nothing. And then at the JV level, they get to run power right and power left, and then they got a little arrow route pass that they throw to the blocking back because he's always open, and you know that's what they do. And then on defense, they just run the bear. On varsity, that's when all the extra wrinkles are in there. So we really try and keep it simple so that coaches can coach and players can play at their highest level as fast as they can do it, without giving anybody any gray area as far as the time that they can spend or the effort that they can put forth.
Well, all that money they're saving without paying the coaches, I know that you got a ton of money into your budget that you're putting into your budget. All that money is going to the budget. Am I correct?
No, sir. Our budget is basically what we can make up financially through fundraising. And so last year I was able to create a grant, and Muscle Milk was able to provide us with the recovery grant. So we had $10,000 to really spend on helping our kids, because the laughing joke during our 2012 campaign, we won a district championship. The funny part was we had 3 programs, and they were all sharing gear, not helmets and shoulder pads, but they were sharing socks and girdles, for crying out loud. It was crazy. But the funny part was, at the end of the middle school games on Wednesdays, we had what you call the box. It was a big box where as soon as the game is over, the kids, the middle schoolers, come in the locker room, take off their pants, their girdles, thighs, and knees, put it inside of the box. The next day for the JV game on Thursday, the JV guys would go in the box, put the same stuff on. After their game, they would put their stuff in the box and come in and put the same stuff on. So, finances is not what we're blessed with. We're blessed with having good hearts, and our school really tried hard. We're just not blessed with the athletic budget. Our school really wants to spend as much money as they can with instructors and things that are, let's just say, more important than football in most people's eyes. So what we do is we fundraise. We get out in the community. We do citywide cleanup projects, and then the city is willing to give us you know, $300 or $500 to help my kids pay to go to football camp out in the woods during the second week of August. So that's basically what we do financially. So no, sir, we don't have a lot of money at all.
And since you've been there, you've had four consecutive winning seasons, and you made the playoff each year.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Four out of the past 5 years. I've only been in Roots for 5 years. Yet we've made state playoffs, which is a great accomplishment. And then last year, 2012, we won a district title, which was the first playoff victory and the first district title in the school's history.
And you did that all by sharing girdles and knee pads and thigh pads and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No one would ever knew because the kids were just as proud and just as happy. You know, at the end of the day, I tell everybody the comparison. River Rouge is your – I don't follow college basketball as well, but I would say it's your Duke or North Carolina per se, whereas we have the most state championships in basketball. And they go all the way back from the 60s throughout the late 90s. So I'm not at a traditional football powerhouse. This place has never really had any success at this level until now, whereas we got, you know, coaches that are texting and emailing me, say, hey, Parker, we'll be in the building. We want to check out your kids. We know how tough you guys play. At the end of the day, that's what we're gauging ourselves on. We're not gauging ourselves on whether we got on Nike or Adidas jerseys. We would like to wear that stuff, but ultimately, how hard we hit people, how much we do versus the opponent as far as the way they look down, walking, and to shake hands because they know that they've been physically demoralized, that's our payment. That's our finances. That makes us feel great because we know we can physically and mentally force our will on people throughout the game on offense and defense, special teams. So ultimately, that's the good part about not having much because the kids are always hungry and they like chewing on those kids that have a whole lot. So that's the great part.
What about your administration, Corey? Is the administration supportive of you? And what about your community support?
Community support took a while, Coach. It wasn't an initial factor. I was still proving myself, quote unquote. I'm not from River Rouge. River Rouge is a small town type of mentality, and they had some good old boys that, quote unquote, was prepared for the job or was entitled to the job per se, and they didn't think a 25-year-old kid could come and make this place what we've made it so far. So I would say the community support now was wonderful because I've shown with, you know, that we can win without your traditional River Rouge kids. Because, I mean, needless to say, Coach, we were also dealing with not having any speed, not having the best talent in our city will go to other high schools. And so that was a negative portion of things. And so now we've been able to show people, hey, we can win without. And so now kids want to come back home and play for their hometown. And so we got some pride going on here. In addition to that, like I said, those citywide cleanup projects, getting out in the community, helping out the old ladies at the church, helping out the cleanup, helping out the old ladies over at the grocery store move their grocery carts to their car. That whole nine, that has made us the men in the community per se. So ultimately, building men is what I've been planning on doing, building strong black men, just being honest, being frank. And so I think we did a great job of showing the young men that us as coaches, this is what a strong black man looks like, and this is what you need to do to make yourself a family man moving on. So I think the community support is great. My administration, my superintendent is awesome. I think he's one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. And he works so hard to try and make things better. He's to the point now where he sends a bus to drop my kids off at the end of practice, which is awesome. I would literally drive kids home in my car, making two and three pickups you know, which was literally impossible, you know. And so now it's to the point where I'm getting some support from him doing those things. I have had a different principal every year since I've been at Rouge. So that's one thing. In-house is difficult. So I am the quote-unquote principal in some people's eyes because I've been there as the dean of students now for 5 years. And so the community support, the kids doing what they're supposed to do out in the community, a strong superintendent, all that stuff has worked hand in hand because, I mean, I'm no man on the island here. I can't do this by myself without everything the chief's taught me, without everything that my high school coach has taught me, without everything my parents have taught me, Coach Jeff, all of you guys that poured into me. I know I may keep pulling and pulling and trying to get more information from you, but that right there is helping me make decisions that I make to help these kids ultimately. So when it all boils down to it, whether my administration gives me support, whether my community gives me support, I'm going to build my business inside somebody else's business and make sure that my kids have the most opportunities to be successful. So that's where I'm at mentally.
You mentioned something a minute ago, which was going to be my next question. Who were some of the people who were instrumental in your development, first as an assistant coach, and now as a head coach?
As an assistant coach, my coach was the most instrumental, and my coach, Greg Carter is his name, is the most instrumental. And I'll say that because he said some things to me. He had a great coach that was above him, Ron Thompson, one of the winningest coaches, old big black man way back in the day, just big, great, great guy, but tough as hell. This guy was amazing, and he ran the ball all night long. And so that's he going to hit you in the mouth. But when it really boiled it down to who Coach Carter was, and Coach Carter tells me right now to this day, if Tomp was still alive, if Coach Tomp is what they call Coach Ron Thompson, if Tomp was still alive, Coach Carter would still be his defensive coordinator right now. So the level of humbleness, the level of just acknowledgement and respect for his elder, it showed me just a whole another respect for being an assistant coach and having some pride in my particular job title and what I do. Another coach that really showed me being a good, humble assistant coach is a guy named John Dignan. And he worked under a gentleman named Scott Merchant, who hired me in 2006 at UD Jesuit. And Dignan is the man. I mean, this guy is great. He knows so many people and knows so much football. He also recruited me to play at Eastern Michigan, so I'm giving him a little bit of a pat on the back, but he recruited me to play at Eastern Michigan, and he stepped down to the high school level to really start working with the high school kids because he really thought that he could help out a friend. And so when I noticed that he did that, I said, this is out of sight. This is crazy. This guy can coach at the college level, but he's making the decision to work with his buddy. You know, so it told me a lot about relationships. And so those relationships right now are the same relationships that I look at when I talk about Coach Jeff, when I talk about you, when I talk about Sean Moore, when I talk about Coach Ramon, when I talk about all of you guys that have just given and given and given to me. And my brain is like, it's a sponge, and I just keep soaking up everything you're talking, everything they're talking. And it really helps me become a better coach. So ultimately, I think all of those guys really helped me become a great assistant coach. And where I'm at today as a head coach, I think I'm just a hardworking assistant coach managing the entire process. That's what I think now.
You went into River Rouge. I'm sure you didn't go with your eyes. Different culture. I mean, you had some issues there, I'm sure. What were some of the things you did to change the culture of that community, of those kids?
Like I said, the most important thing that I did with the kids was to let the kids know they are good enough to become something. It was just going to take some work in the classroom first, in the weight room second. Everything was going to come together third on that field if we did 1 and 2 correctly. So that was the first thing. I created a belief inside of our kids. And if they didn't believe in themselves, they started believing in their dang on brother, the guy next to them. And that guy was going to help them start believing in themselves, creating a level of self-esteem. Ultimately, the next step was just creating a damn attitude, just being pissed off that kids that you grew up with don't think you're good enough to play with. They want to go to the neighboring high school. And so all of that created a level of just intensity and just fear, just ferocity, just madness. And so the way we play is a lot different. So that helped us out. As far as what we look at, as far as what we did to keep the kids from those little group, that small group of kids that we had, making them want to stay home, ultimately it was creating that middle school team and that JV team. When I got there, both of those programs were in shambles. They hadn't had a JV team in about, I would say, 7 years. And the middle school team was maybe a group of boys and girls that were just out there to play for fun. And so we really had to get it to a point where we practiced together. I got rid of all of the coaches. I brought in just my guy with me, and I just said, we're just going to work with straight loyalty, just you and I, and work together and get this thing done. It wasn't that I had something against the other coaches. I just didn't know what their intentions were. I think a lot of the guys that wanted to coach at that point, it was a lot about them. So getting rid of some things, trimming the fat per se, we did a lot of that. We built ourselves up now, whereas the community loves us because, like I said, what we do in the community, doing those citywide cleanups, working at the churches, working at the grocery stores, just being the men in the community. Everybody speaks highly of our program because of the kids in the program, not me, the kids. So the kids have changed the light. And it's a lot of it was, like I said, trimming the fat. I got rid of the thugs. I got rid of the gangbangers. I got rid of the assholes, the kids that don't want to, excuse my language, the kids that don't want to do their schoolwork. I got rid of those guys. So my first season, I went 2-7 because you and I both know, sometimes those thugs, those gangbangers, those assholes in the class, sometimes those guys are your best athletes. And so I vowed to play without them and win without them because I know in the long run, I don't want that to be the structure of my program. Winning is not that important. Building this young man up to become a strong young man, a family man, that's what's going to help me in the long run, not the guys that's going to get the teacher's problems, that's going to MF they mom, the kids that's going to steal from the corner store. I didn't want those guys. So ultimately, Coach, that's what I did. I got rid of those type of guys, the adults and the kids. And we got the kids involved in the community. We closed the gates, per se, of River Rouge, by coaching our own kids. We coached the middle school team, the JV, and the varsity. And we made everything an in-house process, whereas we create that belief system that we are good enough, you are tough enough, and if you not, grab your brother. If he not, grab onto me. I'll show you how to be tough. So that's basically what we did.
Are you still fighting with the you mentioned gangs and a lot of for people don't understand what that's all about in inner cities. They really haven't lived yet. But the other things that you are you competing with outside forces such as teen pregnancy, kids working to help support the family, things like that we have in our culture. Are you still competing with those issues?
Oh yes sir. Yes sir, no doubt about it, Coach. Other than the gangs, I mean, I lost one of my top athletes to a gang 2 years ago now. When I fouled, it will never, ever happen again. And this kid was a freak of nature, 6'3", 205 pounds, 4'4", 40, bench press, 225, 15 reps. And he was a sophomore, tailback, freak. But I lost him because of the choices that he made. So what we ultimately did was start talking to the kids about their choices. We started bringing in different types of counseling services, different types of mentoring services that the kids can become a part of as an after-school project, okay, along with their study hall. So we didn't want to make study hall this thing that they didn't want to do. We wanted to bring in different services. The United Way brought in a service called City Year. And they really helped us. They really blessed us. It was nothing but ex-college students that graduated, and they were basically giving a year of service to the world. And so they talked to the kids about making right decisions, abstinence, you know, doing the right thing at the right time when nobody's watching, having some integrity. So a lot of stuff really began to go outside of me because I made some choices to help the school bring in more people, to help me help the kids. So we do fight against my kids in working. But I'm at the point now where we don't fight it anymore. We work around their schedules. So we let the kids know as long as they come to me, tomorrow, I'm going to have work schedules from all of my kids for their summer jobs. I would say more than 75% of my team work summer jobs. And if it's not a paid summer job, it's a summer job where they got to work while their mom is at work. So ultimately, we work around their schedule. If most of them say, hey, my schedule is available, coach, from 6 to 8, well, fine, we practicing from 6 to 8. You know, and I'll let them have a team vote. If they say, coach, I'm not available in the afternoons or the evenings, fine, we're going to practice from 12 to 2. So we work around our kids because ultimately I understand our socioeconomic construct. It's not in the advantage of the kids to fight with them and play tug of war about what time practice is. I work with my kids and work with my coaches as long as they understand you need to be prompt and need to have some respect for time after I work with them. So I let them set up what their schedule is timing-wise. So ultimately, yeah, we do fight against those things, coach. Teen pregnancies is tough. It's very, very tough because, you know, you work with your young men and you try and talk to the young ladies, but ultimately, you know, if it's not being taught at home as well, then you know, I don't have that much of a base to start from if they're, you know, sexually active when they're young. If they come to me and they're not sexually active, then I got a chance. But if they come to me and they're already sexually active, you know, I'm talking right over their head sometimes. So that is a difficulty. But like I said, we have some resources to help the kids now, and hopefully those resources continuously help us.
Not achieving anything. How do you get your kids to see beyond that?
One more time, coach. Can you ask that question again? Phone's going in and out.
Yeah. Well, how do you get your kids to see beyond the circumstances and the kid right now? See as they walk around with them, see outside of.
Well, ultimately, we try and help all of the kids set goals. And we let them know that, you know, each goal has a different branch that they can go in, you know. Everybody has their dreams. But let's make some reality choices, too. Let's have some standards. Coach, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me? Okay. Yeah, so we just try and help them make some choices, ultimately, that we let them know you're going to be let down sometime in life, okay? That's what perseverance and adversity is all about. And we try and let them know, hey, you know, reach for the sky, you know? There's nothing wrong with that because sometimes those things will happen for you, you know? When the Lord is ready to bless you, be ready to accept your blessings. So do everything that you're supposed to do, but and control what you can control. So we don't get our kids, we don't, quote-unquote, pump our kids' heads up. You know, we keep them a nice, good, firm sense of reality, letting them know, hey, if there's a scholarship available for you, I'm going to help you get that as much as I can help you get it. But you're going to have to eventually run a 40 in front of somebody. You're going to have to eventually bench press 225 in front of somebody. You're going to have to show off on film. So ultimately, we let them know you're going to have to do some things in the classroom that's exceptional to prove to somebody's admissions officer that you're worthy of getting in their university. So ultimately, we put a lot of the stress on ourselves by helping the kids maintain those beliefs and requirements. So we don't put the stress on the kid and let the kid know, hey, well, if you don't get this done, you don't have a shot. No, you just don't have a shot at the first piece of your goal. You know, now you're just on to branch number two. You know, this is the next part of your goal. This is another way of getting your education paid for. You might have to use your Pell Grant. You might have to use some opposite, some other things to get things done with, you know. But at the end of the day, we let them know we're here to support them in any way possible, you know, even after they graduate.
That's fantastic. I know you have all your kids are good and you don't have to deal with them. You know, once you get them in school, they all act nice and everything. Is that true?
No, Coach. I got a knucklehead.
How do you handle your discipline problems?
At the school?
Yeah.
So at the school, the way we handle our kids at the school, the first time you do something wrong, all right, I don't care if the teacher is lying. They shouldn't be lying about you. You should be sitting in the first two rows. You should give your teacher an apple every freaking day for all I care. You will not have a teacher tell me anything bad because I'm going to take their side of the story. So when it comes out to a coach, the way we handle it, the first time you get in trouble, it's just you and your position coach. The second time you get in trouble, it's your whole position group and your position group and your position coach. The third time you get in trouble, it's you and the entire defensive or offensive unit, whichever side of the ball you play on. And I hope you don't play both sides of the ball. Because not everybody will be sit there. I tell them, with great talent comes great responsibility. So if you go screw up in class, understand, you're going to have 25, 30 other kids ready to cut your head off. All right? So that's how we handle those things. And the fourth time you do something, the whole team is involved. Whatever the punishment is, the punishment may be rolling the whole field. It may be doing what we call seal walking. And the kid's going to tell you, it ain't really called seal walk. They call it something else. So call it genital dragon is what the kids call it, genital dragon. So, and they would have to do that up and down the field until I get tired of watching them do it. I will also be a little sarcastic. We got a gate about waist high that surrounds our entire field. And I would basically tell them, you jump the gate, you know, until I get tired of seeing you jump the gate. And so I say, you know, you're gonna end up, you know, running from the law and jumping the gate anyway if you keep breaking my rules. You can't
so
deal with rules
in
society. Y'all getting you ready to jump the gate. So, you know, the athletes, they hop that gate quick, you know, for the first 25, 30 reps. After they get to about 35, Coach, they start climbing over it like an old moose, man. They old and tired and beat down. So that's three of the exercises that we do. We roll them, and I'll roll you down the hall in front of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a problem doing that. I will humiliate you. If you humiliate this program, I'll humiliate you first. So, and then I'm going to turn you over to your position coach. So if it depends upon the intensity of the infraction, but most of the time, the best way for me to teach a kid, you know, how they should act is that bench. Come stand next to me. Send in the signal. Mm-hmm. Watch the game. So that's basically how we handle the kids discipline-wise, because none of the kids is perfect, but my job is to fix their discipline. My job, I can't kick you off the team. And a lot of coaches call me crazy. They say, Parker, you crazy in the mug. You didn't turn into that guy that used to be at UNLV. You deal with all types of players. Say, but I can't cut them, because if I cut them, I just gave a disservice to their family and to them. I just gave up on them, mm-hmm. just like everybody else in their life has. So they going to stay on this team. That's a part of their punishment, for crying out loud. I ain't going to give them the easy way out. So, yeah, so I keep my guys with me, and ultimately we change their behavior or it's going to be a long year for everybody involved. It's A or B.
Now to a football question. It's amazing we haven't even got to a football question tonight, but that's how we roll on this show. Because, you know, the X's and O's are easy. You know, it's not that
for
big a deal.
Guys,
I think
easy.
People need to I don't know about all that, but I think you handle the stuff that we're talking about, the discipline, the direction of where you want your program to go. All that other stuff come easy, because if you put the X's and O's before the kid, you're not going to have anything at the end. What brand of single wing do you run, and why do you run it? And basically,
well, Coach,
what is your offense? What is your philosophy in attacking the defense?
Attacking the defense for me is going to be a very, very physical style of football. Whether we line up with in a traditional single wing look, an unbalanced look, or whether we line up in a balanced look, whether we line up with no backs in the backfield and we line up empty, I want for the defense to have to respond to what I'm doing. And being a defensive coach, ultimately, I know there are certain things that defenses must do. And so one thing that I started playing with after, and I just got to this point now, Coach, you guys have all known, I was a tight formation single wing coach for my first, 3 years running it. I didn't really evolve and start looking at what defensive backs were doing until year number four, because I really wanted just to perfect running off tackle. And I still will not say that I'm perfect at it, because I think I can still get better. I think the kids can still get better. But ultimately, we knew that if we had good get off at the point of attack and we were physical and violent and attempting to put kids on their backs, then we knew we had a shot to get 3 yards. That was the philosophy then. It's still the philosophy now, but it's a million ways to skin a cat. And it's come to a point now where, like I said in the past, I didn't have speed, Coach. Well, now it's a lot of little chitterbugs around my building, 5'8", you know, 160 pounds, run 4.5. It's four of them. And I'll be a fool not to keep these little suckers on the field, because they can all move, you know. One of them rushed for 1,600 yards from me last year as a junior, you know. The other one led us in receptions, and he rushed for 400 yards, you know. And then the other one was on JV, and I think he might have went over the 2,000 mark on JV. And so I know, it, you know, it's not varsity football. At the end of the day, I got to get these guys involved. The other one is coming from the middle school program, and I think he's ready to go right now. So ultimately, we want to attack what you are trying to line up and stop. So if you thinking we're going to stop off tackle, when I'm specifically looking at defenders, I'm looking at defensive backcourt. I know what safeties have to do, because that's what I play. It's certain rules. You get that many guys in a box, you got to be in cover three or cover one. You got middle of the field safety, it's cover three or cover one. I'm looking at your low zone, strong safety, your outside backer, rover, whatever you want to call him. If he's not buzzing to the flat, it's cover one. We know right now it's certain things that we have that's available to attack cover one. The first thing we look at, of course, is our wing back counter, because we know the guy that's covering him is on the opposite side of the field. So we know if we can get him the ball and block great point of attack, they're not in zone, the linebacker is going to chase full flow, and it's going to be basically what we call our quarterback. That's the guy that's directly behind the center for us. He's taking the ball, he's handing off to wing back. The wing back is usually gone for us. Well, now we got a couple other ways to get wing backs the ball. Like I said, and the reason is because I got four little ones that can go. And so we'll have the option now to use a blocking back whenever we want to go with some stuff that we need a blocking back for, and then at times we won't. And what I mean specifically is when we want to do some jet stuff and we want to read the end, you know, some Doug Kerr stuff per se, then we'll be able to jump into that. If we want to use some wildcat stuff and do some Mark Bliss stuff, we'll do that too, because we got some little jitterbugs. We're going to just use our talent so that the kids are successful. I'm not hell-bent on doing what I do per se, because I can still do that, but
I want to be able to give the defense other things to defend. Just like you've taught me, different motions, different block, different small little tweaks of the blocking scheme really helps what you do, but it hurts what the defense do because what they know is what they thought they knew. They don't know what you're trying to do. That's the goal of offensive football, I think. They don't know what play we call. All they can think is what they thought they saw from the past game, percentages-wise. As a defensive man, coach, that's what I do. I go off percentages, you know, so a tendency chart per se. So at the end of the day, we run a lot of different stuff, but ultimately we run in power. That's our play. We run power, say, 92% of the game. So with all the bells and whistles, you know, all the stuff that I'm talking about right now, to give you a direct answer, we run in power. It's just going to be from different types of looks. Our backside guard pull, you know, our center back block, somebody else is severe angle blocking. That's who we are. So whether we're doing that with some jet stuff, whether we're doing it with a blocking back, whether we running, you know, full action into the hole, you know, running basic power off tackle, we don't give that look. And we now found we can do it in a passing game. This is where I'm really hanging my hat on now, the combo plays per se. I love it. And I was doing it like 2 years ago now, and it really started helping because linebackers come downhill because they cross-read my backside guard. And when a Sam linebacker or we, whether we run into the strong side or we side, we got a tight end pop pass right behind him. Now, we haven't been able to throw, but now that we can throw, you know, we got a quarterback that can throw it a little bit. He can put that thing on the money, and now my big old tight end, he can go make a play. Or now I got these slot back guys, now they can go make a play in space. So it takes a play for us that we've been working on since kids was in the sixth grade all the way up to now, and now we're able just to add all the different bells and whistles on it. So the continuity is what I run, per se. and so now we'll do some Dutch Meyer stuff. We'll be empty. But ultimately, we run in all of our same single-wing concepts and principles just by using the different motions and shifts that you've taught me in the past sitting down at TGI Friday. So for all the guys that didn't want to hear you when you're talking about the relationship building at the symposiums and conclaves, those things have blessed me at the highest level because without that car ride with Jeff and without those meetings with you at the bar, I wouldn't have a shot in dry hell.
Well, you've done good. You've done good, my man. Let me ask you this question, and we got about 20 minutes left in the show right here. What advice would you give a young coach today?
Stand for something. Don't allow your community. Don't allow administration. Don't allow yourself to tell you what your initial instinct is, what's best for your kids. That's a God-given gift that we have. And if God has given it to us, we should use it. That natural instinct that most of us usually know and think of and smell and taste, and every time we go against it, we want to knock ourselves right up against the head because we knew I should have stuck with my first thought. Ultimately, our instinct is what drives us. It's what wakes us up in the morning. It's what helps us. It's what helps us protect our family. It's what helps us learn how to fight when we're little kids. It's everything that we've ever known. So that natural instinct that we got of just stick to what your plan is and have a plan that's successful for your kids, you know? And that's one thing that I gotta really look back at. And last year was a transitional year for us. We still won a conference championship. We didn't go as far in the state playoffs as we wanted, but I went from having Angelo, a 238-pound quarterback that can lead block on direct snaps, to a quarterback that if he lead block through a hole, I knew something was going to be wrong with the play. He was going to get stung by somebody's linebacker. So when it comes down to it, Coach, your instinct and making sure what you do fits your kids. Make sure it fits your kids, and make sure the kids are having fun. And so a lot of that advice is really some things that some guys have really probably picked up from other places. But ultimately, that's what it's all about. You know, hang your hat on something and stick to that thing. You know, stick to it. Make off. If we talking offense, if we talking wing, you need to use something to make sure you can get 3 yards. I don't know what that something is, whether it's wedge for you, whether it's off-tackle strong, whether it's off-tackle weak, whether it's buck, I don't care what it is. You just need to be able to hang your hat on that thing and know that this is where we're going to create everything else off of. Don't be a grab baggy guy. And you're sticking your hand in the bag and look for a different play every series. So you stick your hand. So now what's your teaching mechanism? Ultimately, we teachers. We got to be able to pass something down from 6th grade up to 12th grade or from whatever your youngest group is all the way up to 12th grade. And it has to be able to apply to that level of talent. So ultimately, making sure what you do fits who you are and what you have, and use your instinct, and most definitely stand for something.
How have your kids done academically at the school from when you got there to right now? What's your academic program look like? I mean, as far as your players are concerned.
Well, I think we did a good job at that. I'm very, very proud of that number. More important, more proud of I am of that than the wins. You know, we went from a 1.2 team GPA when I first got to River Rouge. Right now, we're up to a 2.82. So we do a tremendous job with them after school. We have a 1 hour and 30-minute practice. And it's not because the kids got out of school, right? It's because after school, the first thing you're doing is getting inside a study hall and sitting down and cracking them ACT books open for the 11th and 12th graders. If you're in a 6th through 9th, 6th through 10th, your buddies, you're in homework help room. You're doing your homework. Because I know when they get home, they're tired. We run a very, very physical practice. We run a very, very conditioning running practice. So you're going to be tired. You're not going to do your homework when you get home. You're going to go to bed, take a shower, eat your dinner, take out your mama's garbage. That's my kids' plans when they go home. So ultimately, our team GPA has went up, but our team ACT scores our kids have started scoring 17s, 18s, 19s. This year we had a kid score 22, Coach. Blew my mind, blew up my heart, made me feel so good. And for my area, I know a lot of coaches are like, 22, man, that's nothing. I got kids with 28s. Well, for my area, 22 is that's big money. You know, I'm going to find some college coach that's going to be able to help this kid, you know, get some books paid for, get some tuition, or maybe, you know, God bless it, get the whole nine paid for, full ride. So when it really boils down to it, those grades have meant so much to our program, and we gaining so much respect from the teachers inside the building, from the administrators inside the building. You know, my kids are in there for business. I get kids that get sent to my office on disciplinary reports because they were asking for more help with their work. Teachers get so tired of them raising their hands and asking questions. Because I tell they behind, if you come to me with some work and you need some help, but you ain't asked her 50 million questions yet, your behind is mine, you're going to be rolling or doing that good old genital drag. So ultimately, that's where we really hang our hat at now, what we do in the classroom. We still got to get better. Our goal is 3.0. We want to be a 3.0 football team. But right now, being 2.18, knowing where I came from at that 1.2, oh, yeah, we got some pride in that.
That's fantastic. How many kids have you placed in college over the last 5 years?
I can give you year by year our comp, Coach. Year one, we sent one kid off. I said I can give you year by year what we did. My entire count will probably be off. But you guys will be able to probably do the addition. I wasn't really good at math. I was in remedial math in high school, but I was in
good. Well, it's all about arithmetic.
So
I can do arithmetic.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right, gotcha. So year one, we had a kid go to a Division II school, Lincoln University. And then the year after that, we sent five kids off to school, three kids to Division III school, Defiance, two kids off to NAIA schools. Lynchburg, Virginia Lynchburg. And then after that, then we had some kids that started scoring on the ACT and doing a good job, doing better, because we were working with kids that hadn't, still hadn't did a great job in their scoring rank, so we weren't able to really place them in great places. But the ultimate job for us is to get them in school. So the year after that, Coach, we end up sending four kids off into Defiance College. And then the year after that, that's when we started continuously doing a good job academically. We sent five kids off after that. That's two to William Penn in AIA school in Michigan, Division II school in Michigan, and then we sent one kid off to a major junior college in New York, Nassau CC, which he's probably our most big-time kid. His name is Kennard Herndon. A lot of people don't know his story, but he's if anybody follows special education IEPs, this kid is cognitively impaired, and to say that he's in college right now is truly a blessing, because nothing that he was able to do in the classroom when he got to River Rouge spoke as if he was going to ever go to college. So he's in college playing right now, and Kansas was just in the building to see him just yesterday. His coach called me and let me know that. So I'm really hoping Kennard does a great job. He's 6'4", 320-pound defensive tackle, and he's a mean sucker from the west side of Detroit. And so that's what we did. And then this year we had the big number. We had nine kids sign this year on National Signing Day.
You had nine kids?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You had nine
kids? Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That's fantastic.
Our first Division I kid, our blocking back and middle linebacker, Hayward Beal, ended up going to Austin Peay University in Tennessee. So we are so happy for him, because he's a kid that comes from, they have seven other siblings inside their household. It's a two-parent household, but they work very, very hard to provide. This is a young man that came from a church house. When I say a church house, Coach, his mom and dad told me, Coach, if he can't get to practice on Wednesdays, if he can't get to church on Wednesdays, he can't come to practice. Serious. So every day since I knew this young man, I literally had to drop him off to church on Wednesday nights. And so
a lot of people don't understand that, some of the things that we got to deal with.
Oh, yeah. This kid, and he wasn't a freak of nature on the field initially. He ran about a 5.1 40, and as a middle linebacker, he was slow. But we built his body up real good in the weight room. He's about 220 pounds of muscle, big wide neck, but smart kid, 3.6 GPA, 18 on the ACT. So all the other Division I schools walked out of the room saying, he doesn't run a fast enough 40 for me, Parker. Say, I understand. Somebody is going to take the kid. So we thought the kid was going to end up at Olivet College here in Michigan, Division III school, and they opened up all the doors, and I really thank that staff for that. Austin P. heard about the kid, and they came in, they took him on his visit, put him on an airplane for the first time in his life, came home, said, Coach, I'm going to Austin P. He signed on National Signing Day, dropped a couple of tears out of my eyes, because, I hadn't had a Division I guy since I was back at Inkster High School, the big program I was with my high school coach. So I was very, very happy for him. The other eight guys end up going to NAIA schools, Division II schools. And so we were very, very proud of everything that we did this year.
Well, according to my arithmetic, Corey, that's 24 kids in 5 years. And that is unreal.
Wow.
That is unreal. According to my arithmetic now, I barely got past 5 plus 5, but I think that's right.
Well, I mean I guess that's a good feather to have on my hat, but that doesn't have anything to do with some of the kids that went off to college to go get a degree, not to play football. And we've had a ton of those kids, so I'm proud just to have the opportunity to help young men. I had a young man I was accepted into Morehouse College last year, and you and I both know that. That's such an established academic powerhouse. that, you know, he's proud to be there. He called me yesterday when we had took a group of kids on a historical black college tour in the Virginia area, and he was just like, Coach, just thank you, you know. We had a celebration for my grades the other night, and, you know, I want to come home in the summertime and do some community service with the team, and I want to be a volunteer coach before I come back to school. Said, you want to, man, you want to get back to the program? It's only, you know, your first year out of high school. And so that mm-hmm. giving back opportunity is, I think that's number one. And so I would never imagine how much I gave to them, but I guess they see it from another set of eyes.
Final question, Corey, and I'm going to let you brag on your program now. But you've been doing a good job of that already. What is the future of River Rouge under Corey Parker? What level do you want to take this school, this program?
Well, ultimately, I want to get the program to a situation where we have more than, you know, three kids up for all state every year. You know, right now we know we should have a kid first team and two kids second team. That's been a goal. So I want to get the program where we get past that. Once again, supporting the kids and their accolades and their wants and their needs. The third thing I want to get that National Signing Day where the entire senior class is signing. I want Division I scholarship after Division I scholarship. I want that to be something that they know, and Division II scholarship, I want that to be something that they know this can happen for me because of my hard work in the classroom, my hard work in the weight room, my hard work on the field. So ultimately, that's where I want to get it. And then eventually, we want to get it to a point where the program is able to coach up itself. And so the situation ends up where, you know, we can get into the semifinals. And we're closer and closer every year. We can get into the state championship. And so that's some place that we want to go to, some place that I can see happening for the program, and ultimately something that I can eventually walk away from. And so create an opportunity to continue to help my family, because it's several different, you know, not necessarily goals of mine, but just opportunities that's been thrown, you know, at my feet saying, hey, well, you know, you're a pretty good coach, so on and so on. And I never want to really believe it because, you know, I think the first time a coach believes that he's really that good, he's about to get his ass kicked, excuse my language. But when it really boils down to it, I really take into consideration where I'm at, what I'm doing, and what I'm doing it for. So to all the opportunities that get thrown at my feet, I look past every single one of them every single year over the past 4 years now, and I really take pride in doing that because I really want to work with my kids. I really want to work with our kids, per se, and the opportunity will present itself someday for one of my coaches who are all youth, they all ex-youth league guys. I got one guy with me that has coached high school ball before, one, and that's my three technique defensive tackle that I told you guys about. But ultimately, I want to get it to a point where one of the youth league coaches that I've brought up with me, one of the good loyal guys, I want for them to get one of the guys that they're to take over the program, but continue to run it the same way I've ran it. I don't believe in leaving a place and it gets worse after I leave. I believe if I leave this place, it gets better from here, you know. So that's my thought process. That's my goal for the program. And so that's what I want. And if I can't get it to happen that way, then I'll be coaching a wheelchair at River Rouge, Coach, until, you know, it's time for somebody to put that dirt on me. So that's the way I look at it.
Okay. All right, buddy. Well, let me tell you something, Corey. The time went by so fast. And I really enjoyed this tonight. You are... Yeah, like I say, your butt is on fire every time I talk to you. But I really appreciate you taking the time out to talk to us tonight and talk to the guys out there. And you know, again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I learned something tonight. So you know, I tell people all the time, I probably got the best seat in the world because I get to ask the question and get the answer, get to listen to the answers. And you know, and get taught again. So, give that wife a hug. Give your son a hug for me, and tell them all I say hello. And you have a good night again. Thank you so much. Okay.
I will, Coach, and I really appreciate you, man, the constant teaching, being hard on me, showing me, you know, it's no easy way to do what we do without having some pride in what we do first. And that's you know, that's never really came out your mouth, but every time you talk to me, I see it in the eye contact. I see it in your expression. I see it in the way you draw. I still got your old nastiness, and I use them to death. You know, so when it boils down to it, I thank you for just giving me the opportunity to continue to get better. And I thank all the guys that's helped me continue to get better and become the coach that I am. But like I continuously say, I'm only scratching the surface, I think. I think God has so much more for me. I think my wife is wonderful at supporting me and helping me do what I do. And I think I got two good boys that I'm really trying to provide for, Angelo and Lil Corey. And ultimately, my team and my community and my administrators that continue to give to me and allow me to work them over and give them the opportunity for success. So I'm very, very thankful for everything I was blessed with and thankful that you have given me this opportunity tonight, Coach. So thank you. And you keep doing what you're doing, the same thing I can do to help. Please let me know. You know I got your back 100%.
Okay, Corey, well, you have a good night now, okay, and I'll talk to you later on, okay, buddy?
All right.
Okay, good night,
bye-bye,
man.
Bye-bye.
Well, everybody, that's the end of our show tonight. Had that the great Corey Parker. I tell you, that kid is going to do some great things in his career. Next week, we have the great Drew White coming next week. And I'll put the audience up in question on Drew White. He's been around for a while. And again, people, I just want to thank all of you who support us and everything. And again, if you got somebody that you want to listen to, you want us to interview and everything, bring it on. Make sure you give us those names of people who've done some great things, your kids and everything, so we can make them, so we can bring it up. Again, I come out with you. Give somebody a hug tonight. Tell them you love them. Make sure you tell your kids you love them too tomorrow. Y'all have a good night. Thank you for listening.
What a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying how. Much more than I ever knew, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.